Stay on up here, Brother Ermler, Brother Tice, come on up. Wasn't that a blessing? And I enjoyed every minute of that, just to think of what God's done. And every one of you have a story, and you're seeing God do some things, and it's just awesome. And one of the things I do really love about this meeting is we've got many of you going to major cities that others have said it can't be done. And you're taking this principle of I'm going to do it by God's power and for God's glory, and it's going to get done. And frankly, lost souls need that, and older preachers need that, churches need to hear about it, and fundamentalism needs it, and it's the hope of the future, really. So just thank you for being faithful. So a couple of questions that we have here, and I'll ask these men to help. I'll start with Brother Ermler on this one. What do you suggest looking for in an initial meeting place? This is from someone that's getting ready to plant, so why don't you go ahead?
All right. As you start, of course, what you're looking for is that sweet spot, not too small, not too big. I would recommend something between 80 and 120 people for that first Sunday. And I personally like hotels because they have a mindset of they're there to serve you. I have dealt with other church planters that have gone into schools and some other kind of public buildings, and you're always the odd person. You know, you're coming into their space. And I know you do the best you can with what you find, but for me, I like coming and having everything set up and ready to go for church. And so that's my preference.
I would say the same thing. I would mention that you need to find a place with plenty of parking or adequate parking. That is always a real need because if they can't park, they can't come. So,
Tice, tell the men how long you've been in Vegas and how many churches you've seen start over there.
We've been in Las Vegas for 38 years. My wife and I graduated from Bible college and came right out to Las Vegas and started the church 38 years ago this September.
Amen.
We have helped plant 11 churches, and 7 of those churches are still operating. And so that's what.
Amen. That's awesome. All right. Let's see here. Let me come back to that one. Would you begin with Sunday morning and Sunday evening right away? Okay, I'll give my thought on that, and then I'll ask you guys to do the same. I really believe that there needs to be a creative license given to church planters, because frankly, even the times and days of services aren't written in the Bible. Okay, so and especially those that are in an inner city. For example, I have friends in Seoul, Korea, who have a 3 o'clock. In the afternoon service because it's such a long subway drive for their people to have to go home and come back is not reasonable. And I know of men who live to criticize who would criticize that. And what I've found in 29 years of pastoring here is until you've walked a mile in someone else's shoes, maybe it's not a good idea to criticize. And so I would just say when it comes to questions like this, there's probably a need for some patience. Now, I believe very strongly in Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. I'll tell you that right up front. Not necessarily Wednesday night particularly, but in the Three to Thrive concept, all right? I do believe strongly in that. But if you were to start without a Sunday night for a period of time, because of logistics, because of having smaller meetings during the week or whatever you're doing, I don't have an issue with that. The one caution that I would give you is this. If you go a lengthy period of time without a Sunday night, intending someday to have a Sunday night, you're getting them into a wrong habit, and they're going to feel tricked when you announce it. So it's in that sense, it may be a good argument for going ahead and starting with Sunday night, or I would say if you don't start right away with it, don't wait too long. It might be 3 or 4 months. You're trying to get your core together. But and I'm going to tell you, I believe in Sunday night. I have liberty to preach on Sunday night in a way that I don't have on Sunday morning. The crowd, and again, a lot of folks that might like to analyze, it's not that we have a different doctrine or even a terribly different philosophy, but California is a different situation. And what I mean by that is on Sunday morning, I have to teach and preach and break some things down for people who are very biblically illiterate. I'm talking about people who don't know who Adam and Eve are. They've never heard of a difference between an usher and a deacon and things of that nature. So then for me on Sunday night to preach to the Christians is really it's a different service. So I love Sunday night and I love the midweek. So my answer would be have Sunday night. If you don't have it right away, I understand that. But if you wait too long, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. All right, Brother Tice, what would you say to that?
I would agree with that totally. I think that Sunday night is a great opportunity. It's my favorite service of the week. It's a time where all the people that are serving, that are out there on Sunday morning, that are serving, are in with you, and you can really encourage and teach your core. It is so, so vital. And I think starting Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night all at the same time is important, because it gives, for those who have already been going to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, and they're used to that, they come over and now there's no Sunday evening service. Well, where are they going to go? And we've actually had people from other church plants come up over to our services on Sunday night, and I think this is not good for that church plant. You need to build that loyalty. If you can, even if it's a core service where you're just meeting together, get together with your people as often as you possibly can, because they need to see you.
Anything to add to that, Brother?
I agree with both of those wonderful testimonies and recommendations. Let me just add to that. As a church planter who planted a church 25 years ago and today, I have a new appreciation for what our young guys are going through in planting a church. And it's not like it used to be. And so there are adjustments that have to be made. You know, we sometimes don't recognize that this guy is renting this space by the hour. And he's going by faith, and he needs a place to be, and he doesn't have really the finances coming in yet to take care of that. We still to this day have a midweek service in a house. So it just is, it is something that is peculiar to certain areas.
I want to make sure that you understand this. I understand as well that people, you've got to do what you can do. But as soon as you can have those three services a week, I would do it, because you need that. There, don't let people crowd you in to their particular rules and regulations. You're going to meet when you can meet, and you've got to do what you can do. When we baptized in hot tubs and swimming pools and anything we could. We did what we could. And so you can't let guilt on your head because you can't meet Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. But you, when you can, as soon as you can, you ought to.
And my only other comment to that is, don't forget, you have a family that needs the preaching of the Word of God, and they need the fellowship. And so don't ever be embarrassed if it's your family and three people. Have a great time. And that's something I think is very important as well. Let me see here. Other than door knocking, what is the most important or productive form of outreach or advertisement? Brother Umler, why don't you start, because you're fresher than the two of us with church planning and outreach.
I'm really big on saturating areas with as much material as you can. So even if you can't, you need a door knock throughout, but just getting before the people as much as you can. I have found that it's just cheaper for me, and it's good exercise. But it is just getting those flyers out. We have not done a whole lot yet with radio or newspaper.
I always, I love the phrase "other than door knocking," but I always just come back to it because of what he just said. Because that's about all I could ever afford, and it's what we still do a ton of. We've knocked on over 400,000 doors now for years and years and years, and that's every door in our city and in the neighboring city three times a year. And so other than door knocking, I would say a couple of thoughts. I would say, first of all, look for fellowship opportunities where your members can bring friends, whether that's a friend day, an open house Sunday, simple thing like a potluck. Look for missions opportunities where you have missionaries coming in, and you know there's ethnic groups in your city that might have an interest in that particular missionary. Look for free advertising. And if you are in a hotel, maybe get some signs out on the corner. I'm big on signage and balloons on the signs and anything to draw attention to the fact that you're there. Every church planter, in my opinion, should have a number of sandwich board signs. Every church should. I have a man who every Sunday morning puts signs at K and 40th, M and 40th, K and 30th, M and 30th, I and 30th. We put signs everywhere around here, even though you almost can see us from 5 miles away, but we want to just steer them in, and we want to make our presence known. Dr. Robertson said to me several times, "Pastor your city." He told me that when we ran 500. And he said, "I want you to encourage you to make tracks." He said, "Put your picture on the track and pastor your city." And amazingly, when I haven't been to our mall here in the Antelope Valley in 7 years, which is such a blessing. But when I do go to a place like a mall or Costco is where I go some still, I see people that go to our church, used to go to our church. We've done funerals. We've done weddings. We've knocked on their door. And by the dozens, hey, Pastor Chapel, hey, Pastor. And over time, it is more than door knocking, but door knocking has been the fundamental thing for us. But just through serving the community, the Love Works program that we've been doing in our fall campaign where we go to commuter lots and we give coffee out in the morning and give a gospel track. We went to a veterans home this year and just held some services, and now we have a bus every Sunday morning of 20 veterans, and some of them are sharp as a tack, by the way, and several have been saved. So lots of ways that you can serve and look for every way to serve, and don't ever have this small man's disease that, well, we're little, so we can't do. Why not? Why not have a law enforcement appreciation day? Well, maybe only one cop will show up. That's better than none. Okay? I mean, it took us 29 years to have a couple, 300 people like that show up at an event. My first few, we had one. First time we had a city appreciation day, we would get maybe a city council member, maybe. Maybe the janitor sometimes. I don't remember. But, you know, now they all want to come. But the point is, start somewhere. Get your calendar, build with what you can build with, and over time, your presence really does get known. So door knocking is the key, but a lot of other ways to serve can help too. Brother Tyson, any special thing that comes to your mind?
Let me share something with you. My mentor shared with me. Write your own gospel track. And make sure when you write the gospel tract, you give the gospel. Include the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that he suffered and died and paid the penalty for your sin. Get that gospel tract and have it as your cornerstone gospel tract that you can print other things, all sorts of different things, but have that as a cornerstone and use it over and over and over and over and over. We have this tract that has been... I mean, I think well over a million of these have been all over Vegas. I'll go to somebody, and I'll take this track, and I'll hand it to somebody, and they'll say, oh, we get those all the time. And that makes me rejoice because, and then I say, hey, I wrote that. You wrote that? And then I give them the gospel. It's a wonderful thing. You, as a pastor of your church, your people can say, my pastor wrote that. And it's just a key. I would agree with everything else that everybody said. I mean, you need to go door knocking. That is it. We need to go door to door. We need to get our face out there, and that's the cheapest way you can do it. But if you have your own gospel tract that has the gospel in it, also with information about your church, and there's guys that are producing great stuff now in our fundamental circles. So do that. Make sure you have something that says, I believe that Jesus Christ is God, that he is the Savior, and you're giving the gospel, and you're getting it out, and it's from your church, and I think it's very helpful.
Probably all of you guys are doing this, but put your personal story on your website and build content into your website. People like to know where you're from and about your family and about your vision. I think that's really important, and so that all of that helps you to saturate your community. Here's an interesting question. Recommendation on training piano players for the church. I will say what we did. We basically had songs on tape recorder, and I led the singing, and it was good. Okay. It was first rate. But that was one thing that we did, and then we had a few ladies that came in who weren't great pianists right at first, and they took some lessons. Brother Rimmler, what have you done? Because that is one of the biggest things, sure. And everybody feels so intimidated because you got all the mega churches with all their stuff and such. But what would you recommend for just starting a music program in a church plant?
Yeah, plant a church close enough to West Coast Baptist College so that you can have a pianist.
And if you're in Southern California, that's a good answer. So we have students that go to 60 churches every weekend, and we really prefer them in church plants. So, but other than that, I think there is a lot of good taped music. And you know what you're going to find? There are people all over America who are feeling left behind because the seeker movement came in and the praise band took over the choir and nobody wants a piano player or whatever. And there are people that want to play a piano or do something in your church. And you'll find people like that. And once you find them, just nurture them and train them along the way. Okay? Any thought on the music side, Brother Tice?
If you get two or three ladies that can play a little bit and just ask them to practice three or four songs and get them over and over and over again, and you get two or three different ladies that know three or four different songs, and they're really good at those songs, that has helped. We've done that in the past, and so we're going to sing Trust and Obey the third week, and Linda's going to do that, and we're going to sing Just as I Am this week, and Julie's going to do that. You can. They feel confident with their songs, and it works.
There's a lot of singing evangelists and singers that really think they're really good, and they really like to go, and they're better than what you have. Okay, and so, and I don't know. I have not one group in mind. I can just tell you. I've been in some meetings where now we're going to have this family sing, and they sing, and I'm like, wow, they're on the road with that? You know, I mean, it's amazing to me that they get, you know, they get meetings. So I say that somewhat facetiously. The great thing is I think that because I have some little bit of understanding of maybe quality, but our members would love to have folks like that when we started the church. And we had, singing families and trios and guys that, and sometimes it was a catastrophe, I'll admit it. Music in the first few years is, you just got to have a sense of humor, really. But watch for people that are around and, you know, that are, you know, fairly conservative and fit your style, whatever. And sometimes there are folks that, and sometimes there's even guest preachers that come and sing and such. So that's a good one. Here, Brother Shepherd, I don't know the answer to this one. How does Obamacare affect church payroll? Is there any quick two or three things you would say on that? Okay, so most church planners, you're either going to receive a W-2 because you're running funds through your sending church, or you're going to have to fill out a 1099, I would imagine, of miscellaneous income. So I don't think Obamacare affects a smaller church plant. But if you have questions about tax filing or things of that nature, feel free to call Brother Shepherd or Brother Hobbs in our financial office on that. Here's a great question. Any tips on raising support quickly? I love that question. So I'm going to give you my thought on that very quickly. First of all, consider the ant, thou sluggard, would be a good verse to keep in mind, okay? We have several men that have come out from this ministry who have raised their support up in a fairly good amount of time. And every one of them, to the man, gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, California time, and starts on the phones calling preachers in the East. And they'll call in regions, and they'll just call till they get enough for a trip out there. Then they'll call the next region. I remember Brother Abram, I told him to do that. How much support do you have coming in, Abram? Okay. So the ones that have promise, you better call them back. Okay, and put the squeeze on them. But anyways, I remember Brother Abram, I said, now go to this region, go to that region. And one day he says, I'll be going to Hawaii to be with Brother King. And I said, what region is that? King doesn't have any money, you know. And but anyways, so, you know, everybody just wants to just raise support from Hawaii, you know. But anyways, start early in the morning and make your calls. And call. Keep a humble spirit. Pastors are very hard to get a hold of. And I will tell you something. As soon as you can get the phone ringing to real people, you're going to help your church. Because by the time a lot of these pastors in the Midwest answer their answering machine and get back to answer the phone call, someone else has already helped those people. You've got to be available, okay? You got to call. It's hard to get a hold of them. Keep calling. Once they commit to support, keep writing them. Once you're ready to get to the field and you're getting ready to start, call every one of them up. Because a lot of times pastors have been disappointed with supporting church planters because of various different issues. And a lot of times their attitude is, if he goes to Inglewood, when he goes there, I'm going to start supporting him. Because they just don't like supporting a three-year thing, you know. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's reality. So when you get ready to go, call them and tell them you're going to be there. And of course, just keep corresponding. The other thing is, at some point when you're close, that whole faith thing will kick in. And that's when you pray for good offerings, okay? And so those are a few thoughts. Start early in the morning. Stay humble. Stay aggressive. Keep writing the folks. And I would say this, too. Don't just write them your monthly report. This month we went 712 miles, and Sophia had a cold, but she's better now, and, you know, that type of thing. Sometimes just write a pastor a thank you note. Sometimes just, you know, you see something that reminds you of the pastor. And just be a friend and have a relationship beyond just the support issue. And that is a help sometimes too. Brother Ermler, how have you become independently wealthy? Share it with us.
Well, you start a church all wrong without going on deputation. 25 years ago, we just went, had one church that helped us prior. And then you pastor that church for a while, and then they'll pay for it. But if you can't do that, call preachers and tell them, I need money. We're planning a church. Short term is the key. Let them know you're just going to take it for a certain specific amount of time. That's putting faith into it. You're trusting God that in a certain period of time you're going to be done. And then ask only for your personal family support, not for the ministry. I think guys are taking forever because they want money for the building, they want money, you know, for the ministry, they want money for this and that. And if you really have a good start, all of that will be provided through the offering plate from week one. And we've never lacked, as far as a church, being able to pay all our bills because from day one, that nucleus has taken care of us. So just get what you need and get to the field.
I think it's important that you let the pastors know what you have done. When somebody calls me, I want to know, so what have you been doing the last couple of years? And I want to know, if you're at West Coast Baptist College, I want to know, were you in a bus ministry? Were you leading people to Christ? What have you done? If you're coming out of a church, what did you do at that church? I want to know if I'm supporting somebody who is going to go and do something, not their plans. I don't want to hear their promises. I want to know what you have done. And then make sure you get a recommendation from a pastor that tells what you have done. Also, in your support letters, contacting the pastors that are supporting you, don't talk to them about, I want to know, this is what I want to know as a pastor. I want to know how many people got saved, how many people got baptized, how many doors you knocked on. I mean, if nobody got saved and you knocked on 10,000 doors, that impresses me. I want to know what you're doing, that you're not just sitting back. I've had church planners say to me, well, door knocking doesn't work in where I am. If I hear that, I think, okay, so what does work? Because last year you were running six, and now you're running six. So maybe door knocking would bring you one or two more. I want to know what you're doing, and I want to know how effective it is. And that's what I want to know as a pastor, if I'm supporting you.
And I would say this, and I know this is maybe not something that everyone likes to hear, but don't try to push your trendiness when you're trying to get support. Now, don't fake it like you're conservative fundamental either, but don't make everything in your printed material and everything in your speech all about the trendiness. What he just said, you know, when you're raising support, pastors want to know nuts and bolts, okay? Are you King James, you know? Are you going to go soul winning? Are you, you know, are you going to hold the stand? Whatever, and so forth. So you're going to just hurt yourself if you're just trying to act too trendy. Then on the other hand, if you're just going to be a total temporary thing, you're probably getting support from the wrong crowd. So, you know, you have to be honest and be nuts and bolts is what I'm trying to say. Just stick with the nuts and bolts. Just say, Pastor, we want to go knock on doors, win souls, disciple people. We want to someday support missionaries and that type of thing. So final question, just for the sake of time, what are the negatives or positives about launching with a team? So I'll give you a couple of my observations, okay? Positives, obviously. You're able to go out soul winning together. You dream together. You have helpers to work in the nursery from the very first Sunday. The positive is the synergy of having partners, and it certainly is a biblical model. Negatives, if you do not clearly discuss the roles and the expectations, it's like marriage counseling. When the expectations were different, you have to do marriage counseling. And so if you don't clearly discuss the role, the senior pastor has to be the overseer from day one. And if the other guy's there to get experience and then he's going to go start, then discuss that and know when that's going to happen. And probably have all of those things discussed, because if you're not careful, then the guy that went to help says you're too bossy or whatever. And it becomes, then I have seen missionary teams just arguing with each other. So the negative would be if there's not a clear understanding of the role of everybody on the team, it can disintegrate. And you have to be willing to go alone. If God puts the team together, that's great, but be willing to go alone. And always remember, God can use this great building that was going to be and then it didn't happen, or this great team that was going to go and then they didn't go. I've seen God use stuff like that fell apart just to get you going in that direction. And I would just say, when some things fall apart, just keep going in that direction. Amen. Because God will make a way. What would you say about the team thing?
100% agree. I think one of the struggles sometimes is this co-pastoring concept never works, or guys trying to go out on deputation together. And I've had guys throw that at me. I said, that isn't going to work. You know. So really establish who's the pastor and then what's going to happen in a year or two.
It's really hard for the guys that are the helper of the church planner to get support, just the bottom line, so they need to know that. Most of them need to either have some fund stream already set up or some willingness to work a side job.